And we want you to feel safe and secure, especially on this particular topic that we are dealing with, suicides among the military. And I said, you don't have to be in the military to care about what we're talking about, because we're talking about your sons and your daughters, your family members, whether you're civilian or not. And we have to save these lives. 9,000 military vets will die this year. 9,000. 22 a day taking their lives for a variety of reasons. And my guest, Nicole Jones, who's a coordinator with the Veterans Administration, the Prevention Lifeline Crisis Call Center, will give you that number again. But she mentioned how young people sometimes want to enter this fray, if you will, make contact differently. They like different techniques. And no one knows that any more than my son, Babe Barry, who is here in the studio, because I can't get him to make a telephone call, but we can text all day long. I think that's the new normal for you, isn't it, Paul?
Yeah, you know, it's easier for us, and we found ways with text slang to text more quickly and efficiently. So yeah. Communication is supposedly evolving. We'll see.
I would just talk to me for a minute about when I approached you on this subject. What was your feeling? What did you think? Did you know anything about this?
You know, I had no idea when you presented me with the numbers. I was really surprised because I have friends who are serving who are my age. And I think even some of them didn't know how serious it is. It's an important national issue that's really deserving of our attention, and I'm glad that I can join the dialogue.
Yeah, and the reason I thought it was good is that you're 23. You're a prime suspect, if you will, for entering the military. You have some choices to make, you know, and those choices are I can or I may not, I may do, but you should know about this, and I think it's just stunning to think that after the sun goes down, 22 people that could have heard us today won't hear us ever again because they've decided that this is the way to end it. I know you talked to some of your friends. What did they say?
I did. I talked to some younger vets, as Nicole was saying earlier. You know, younger vets both have different experiences than some older who saw other combat tours.
Right,
and
right.
Some current serving friends who are experiencing stress too. And I think they're in danger as well. As you said, it's not just veterans, but active service members who are committing suicide in large numbers too. And one thing that some of my friends said is that a lot of these service members are coming into the service when they're 18, 19 and are maturing and growing up. And they're doing a lot of growing up very quickly, but they're not growing up in a way that other kids my age are. They're not learning how to organize their lives outside of the military. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. They have a lot of structure in the military. They have a chain of command. They have very regimented days. And when they leave the service, you know, not only are they dealing with the stresses that they've undergone, but they also are thrown into a world where they don't necessarily know how to organize their lives in the way that
readjust,
they have.
They
do.
Yeah.
They have to readjust societally and in terms of just organizing themselves. And I think that that's a huge stressor.
Yeah, absolutely. I imagine it would be. If you then toss into that those who have been in combat, who may be a little bit older than your friends, who are now back out, they've got to go through the process of what they saw, what they did. And I understand that. I mean, I'll never forget the images of my Vietnam days, months. It was overwhelming. But you've got to make those adjustments. And I think we can see how that can be very difficult.
Yeah, I can. I mean, it's something that's kind of being portrayed in pop culture right now as a way of understanding our veterans in the Crisis Hotline, Veterans Press One documentary on HBO, An American Sniper. You'll see repeatedly that there's moments when these veterans may be watching television or trying to sleep, and they won't be able to shake an image. They won't be able to get over a particular moment. And it leads to just, you know, how do you deal with that?
Yeah.
How do you get over it? And nobody else can see it or hear it or understand what exactly you saw.
And Nicole, they don't necessarily, unless you call them out, they're not going to call you out to say, help me, will they?
Well, yeah, that's what we're trying to get out to them, is that it's okay to ask for help, because you're right. That's a difficult thing for anyone to ask for help. But we, our veterans, the training is for them to be the strongest and to protect everyone else. And so it is hard for them to reach out. But we're trying to get that message out that it's okay, that these are some of the things that will happen to you, and they're normal, you know, considering your experience, but we can help you.
Yeah, yeah. And all you have to do is, well, you can't assume, to my audience, you can't assume that somebody is necessarily going to know what you're going through. So you have to help out a little bit and be willing to reach out and say, look, I'm stressed. I'm so stressed, I think I'm going to take my life. But before you do that, call Nicole and the folks out there that who are willing to help you. They're sitting there waiting and saying, okay, Nicole, what are some of the signs that I should or we should look for that says we got a military member or anybody in trouble? They're in trouble. What are those signs?
Yeah. You know, signs they vary. I mean, someone talking about death or writing about death, someone who is asking about guns or stockpiling medications, who's become really withdrawn or isolated, and that's not normally their personality, giving away possessions or saying goodbye. You know, sometimes family members will call because they're concerned. And the thing about our hotline, which is wonderful, is it doesn't just accept calls from veterans. If family members want to call about a loved one, they can also call. They can get information from the Veteran Crisis Line to help their loved one, to get their loved one engaged in some treatment, even if that loved one is not aware that they need it yet. And so that we appreciate that the Veterans Crisis Line is also giving family members who are on the front lines of this battle, because they see their loved one day in and day out, and they see that decline, they can actually know what to do as well if they call. So they need to understand that this line is for them as well, to save our veteran loved ones.
When I came back from Vietnam, I was confronted with the feeling that that we had somehow lost the war. I didn't lose the war. I followed my instructions. I followed my orders. Unfortunately, we weren't always over there to win. That meant I had to deal with that stress as well, but I had to deal with the stress before that. And when we come back, I'll tell you how I returned from Vietnam and why I can say to my brothers and sisters in the military that I'm one of you. I suffered through those stresses, and I survived. And if I hadn't, that young man you just heard from, Barry, wouldn't be here. We'll be right back with more. This is Home and Family Finance. I'm Paul Barry. Our topic is simple, complex, everything. It's about life and death. It's about someone out there deciding right now that this is the last day that I'm going to live, because I'm going to take my life because I can't deal with the stress. I don't want you to do that. I want you to deal with the stress, and I want you to know there are people out there who are willing to help you. For instance, Nicole Jones, who's on our line here, a coordinator for the Veterans Administration Prevention Lifeline Crisis, a call center. My son, Babe Barry, in studio here at 23, who's mulling over all of this and saying, yeah, I understand how pressures can get to you, but none of those pressures are worth taking your life. And if you think that they are, and I appreciate that you do, then call someone and just check yourself out. Verify that you're right, that you have a right to die today, because you're right about all the things that you feel. But just suppose that you're wrong. There's no coming back from suicide. You know, I came back from Vietnam, and I was I had what I guess you would call a crisis. I passed out. I was hospitalized. They sent me to a hospital in Cameron Bay, and then from Cameron Bay on to Tokyo, Japan. And I spent a few weeks there trying to reassess. I wanted to get back. All I wanted to do was get back to my unit in Tuiwa, South Vietnam. But every time I talked with somebody, they said, well, you know, you're stressed, Paul. And finally the decision was made, not by me, but by those people that know better, that I needed to be shipped home. And so they shipped me from Vietnam to Shepherd Air Force Base. And I was brought, because physically I looked okay, so it's a part of the psychiatric. You come back as a part of a psychiatric unit. And the first night that I returned from Vietnam, I was in a psych ward at a hospital. And I was like, I don't belong. This is not, you know, I'm okay. Hey, folks, I was suffering. And other people knew that, and I suppose there were times when I thought about taking my life. I was embarrassed. How could this happen? So on and on. But you know what? I got through it. And today, years later, some 50 years later, I look across at my 23-year-old son, And I'm so pleased that I didn't do anything foolish. How dare me not allow this young man to have a life, and my daughter and my other son and my wife not have a husband because I made what I think would be a selfish decision on your part. Now, I'm not talking about you as a crisis manager. I'm talking about you to you as one of you. I've been through the pressure. I know what it feels like. I know how difficult it is to get rid of images. I know how to deal with the things that I had to do when I was over there. I know what it was like to come back and not be accepted and be treated like I was part of the problem as opposed to being over there as the solution. That's why I was there. And I was willing to give up my life to do it. I was there. So I know what you're going through. I know where you are. But I'm telling you, don't do this. Call Nicole or someone like her and say, I think I want to die. What can you do for me? Nicole, what can you do for me?
Well, basically what we do, like I said, you know, initially when someone calls the Veterans Crisis Line, they are going to ask about imminent risk. We want to know if you're at home and you have a weapon. They want to know that because they want to make sure that we get some help to you ASAP. And the Veterans Crisis Line has done over 50,000 rescues. So they've actually gone to the home of a veteran at risk imminently who is called the Veterans Crisis Line and been able to get them into the hospital. So that's the main thing. We want to make sure that there is not imminent risk. But the other part of it is as you're talking with someone and you're telling them what you're going through, that veteran provider on the other line can connect you with your local VA. They will call, like say for instance someone from Maryland calls. They'll give me a call and say, this veteran called, these are his issues, and basically we call him up and then we say, this is what we can do. Locally, here's the resources that we have. And our main objective is to give access to care. We want veterans who had not been either not been involved in VA care or have not been connected in some time to have immediate access to the services that they need. And through the Veterans Crisis Line, we can give that.
Let me give that number while you're talking. 1-800-273-TALK. 1-800-273-8255.
In addition to the Veterans Crisis Line calling the telephone to get more information about resources available and use the chat and more information about text, there's a website as well. It's www.veteranscrisisline.net. And it's great resources for veterans mm-hmm. and their family members.
So you don't have to talk. You can just put in what you're feeling, what you're thinking, asking for the help you need. And you don't have to confront anybody.
You don't have to. If that's uncomfortable for our veterans, we want to make sure that they have some way to communicate where they're at, what they need. So they can do the text from their cell phone. They can do the chat from their computer. There is even a resource on that website where they can do a self-check. And it's basically an assessment online that they can do anonymously. They can put in answers to questions. And it really gives an idea to the provider who will be looking at it, what's going on in that veteran's life. And that veteran can then get anonymous feedback. Say, for instance, they talked about a lot of difficult things that they're going through and their risk is elevated. That provider might say, it will be important for you to see a provider and tell them where they can go to the nearest VA. And so we just want to, you know, do everything we can to, as you said, to just, you know, let one person know that hope is there.
We'll be right back. 1-800-273-8255. Our topic today is about those 22 Americans, 22 veterans, some serving, some not, who will indeed make the decision that that they're going to take their life. That they're going to commit suicide. They're going to kill themselves. Not by any other hand but their own. Now, let me say something I used to say to my young people that I worked with as a result of this. You have, look, give me a call. You have, you. Let me talk to you and tell you how stupid you are about to be. What a dumb thing you're going to do. Let me just call me and let me tell you what I think about it. And then you have a right to do what you want to do. That calling me doesn't stop you from doing what you want to do, if that's what you want to do. But at least give me a chance to tell you how stupid that is, how wrong that is, how backward that is, how it doesn't, it ends a problem maybe for you, but it creates problems for those who love you all over the place. It creates problems for your friends. It creates problems for everybody that knows you. You're not solving anybody's problem, but selfishly trying to solve your own. So there's got to be a better way. So call Nicole. Nicole, you will listen and you will give advice. And as I said, then they can do what they want to do anyway, right?
Yeah, I guess working in this field, I've gotten to understand a lot of times our veterans feel like they're doing something good for their family. They feel as though they're a burden. Their condition is burdensome to their loved ones and friends. And so a lot of times people feel like, you know, the survivors feel like suicide was selfish. But in the mind of that person who's really struggling, they feel as though they're doing their family a favor. Mm-hmm. And I think that's one of the biggest misconceptions about suicide, is that that person is hurting so bad that they just think about themselves and ending the pain. And yes, I think it is true that they're hurting and they want to end the pain. But I think the issue is that they feel as though they're a burden to their family, mm-hmm. and they want to protect them. I've even heard a veteran say before that he would rather die and have his insurance money provide for his family because he's unable to provide. And so there's so much more that people don't understand about the phenomenon of suicidal thinking that I think that's why the stigma is up. You know, people mm-hmm. think that it's a selfish thing, and the decision that that person makes is only for themselves. They really make it for the people that care about them. They feel like they're helping others by taking themselves out of the equation.
And just for the record, if you commit to suicide, the insurance companies generally won't pay. Isn't that true?
There are some stipulations related to suicide, yes.
Yeah, I think so. Okay. You talked about gun locks. I remember that we had that discussion, and I want you to get that out as we're about to close. So what?
Well, the major issue is that, you know, suicide, most suicides occur via guns. Actually, more suicides occur than homicides with the use of guns. And so our facility, and actually nationally the VA does this, they have gun lock programs. But I can only speak to what we've done here in Maryland. And what I do know is that we've given out over 900 gun locks, some 10 to one household. Because some of the rural parts of Maryland, a lot of people own guns. And we know that that's an increased risk. But we know that our numbers have actually decreased as a result of this action. And so we really want to get out there that if you have gun locks as a veteran, even just for the sake of yourself, your family, you know, children who accidental deaths occur, it's important to have safety with your weapons. And for our veterans, it's not an issue of ownership. You know, we want our veterans to know we're not saying that you shouldn't own it. And we're not saying because you have mental health issues you shouldn't. That's your choice.
Right, right.
But we do want to make sure that they're safe.
And a step. It's a step that you have to go through if, in fact, you have the locks. And before I go, Paul, can we make any difference here? Do you think our discussion with young folks, do you think they will hear what we're talking about?
I think they will. And I think it's something that is being talked about more and more. But when I talk to my friends who are active service members, they also didn't know the numbers. Mm-hmm. They didn't quite realize how serious of a situation it was. So I think the more we can talk about it, then, you know, maybe the Navy, the Army, they can start putting in place programs to help educate
more
people.
Stuff. Okay. All right. Nicole Jones, will you come back and talk with us again on this subject?
Absolutely.
I really am pleased to have you with us. And the hotline again, number 1-800-273-8255. 1-800-273-TALK. Talk to somebody before you do something that is irreversible. We'll be back next week, and in the future weeks we'll talk about this again, and I'm going to continue to talk about it until we can hopefully make a positive difference. This is Home and Family Finance. I'm your host, Paul Berry. Have a great day.